I heard he needed some help on the farm. Somebody with a truck and two strong arms, not scared of dirt and willing to work till the sun goes down. So I pulled up and said, I'm your man. I can start right now. And we shook hands. He said, the fence needs fixing, the peaches need picking, and the cows need bringing round. I was hauling hay, I was beating the hogs, and that summer sun had me sweating like a dog. So I cooled off in the creek. Then it was back to work, and that dad come heat. I was cussing out loud, thinking about quitting. Looking back now, I'm sure glad I did. 'Cause just when I thought it couldn't get no hotter, I caught a glimpse of the farmer's daughter. Just getting home from Panama City. She was all tanned up and my kind of pretty. When her eyes met mine, I was thinking that I sure love my job. As the days got shorter, our talks got longer. The kisses got sweeter and the feelings got stronger. So we'd hop in the truck and get all tangled up every chance we got. We were down by the all night long. When the sun came up, I was sneaking her home and dragging my butt to work. With the smell of her perfume on my shirt, I'd be on the tractor, she'd be on my mind. With that sun beating down on his back of mine, and just when I thought it couldn't get no hotter, I fell in love with the farmer's daughter. We got married last spring. Oh, and there ain't no better life for me. I'm still hauling hay and feeding the hogs, and that summer sun's got me sweating like a dog. So I cool off in the creek, and she brings me out a glass of sweet iced tea. Now I'm on the tractor, she's on my mind, and I can't wait till it's quitting time. And just when I think it can't get no hotter, I come home to the farmer's daughter. Yeah. The farmer's daughter. Yeah,
baby. Come. Well, raccoons trying to get on our back porch. Mom's just chasing them off with a broom.
Hey, pretty baby, are you ready for me? Yeah, you better ride your daddy down from Tennessee. I'm just out off about San Antonio with the radio blasting and the bird dog calling. There's a speed trap up ahead.
If you're a country music fan, particularly classic country, join me, Cope Reynolds, every Friday night for Liberty Lounge right here on the Survival Circle Network.
Nothing ever happened around my hometown. I ain't kind of just hanging around. But I heard someone call my name one day, and I followed that voice down a lost highway. Everybody told me you can't get far.
Absolutely the fastest 2 hours on internet radio. Liberty Lounge. Every Friday night from 8 to 10 p.m. Pacific, 10 to midnight Eastern. Right here on Survival Circle.
I want the truth! You can't handle the truth!
But you can find it right here on the shooting bench. Coming up next.
Son, we live in a world that has walls, and those walls have to be guarded by men with guns. Who's going to do it? You? I have a greater responsibility than you can possibly fathom. You have that luxury. You have the luxury of not knowing what I know. And my existence, while grotesque and incomprehensible to you, saves lives. You don't want the truth because deep down in places you don't talk about at parties, you want me on that wall.
You need the shooting bench.
We use words like honor, code, loyalty. We use these words as the backbone of a life spent defending something. You use them as a punchline.
And I am sick of the lies and the deceit and the intrusions on my privacy and the invasion of my home. And we do not intend to take this lying down.
I have neither the time nor the inclination to explain myself to a man who rises and sleeps under the blanket of the very freedom that I provide and then questions the manner in which I provide it. I would rather you just said thank you and went on your way.
And now, if you think you're ready, the shooting bench. And I come sliding in here just in time. Welcome to the shooting bench. It is Wednesday, 25th of May. And, wow, unbelievable that this month has gone by as fast as it has here. Coming up pretty quick here, just 3 weeks. We'll be in Yakima, Washington at the LFA Arms Expo and Preparedness Fair. We'll have a booth up there. Probably won't be as extravagant as it was last year, but we'll have one. And 2 days after the expo's over, we'll be doing a Counter-Strike class there in Yakima. And then 3 days after that, we'll be a little further north up in Marble, Washington, doing a 3-day personal defense handgun class. So if any of you are going to be in that neck of the woods and you want to get some training and rub shoulders with some fine patriots and friends up there, then be sure and look us up. Give me a holler. You can go to southwestshootingauthority.com and look at the stuff we have to offer. You can email me at theshootingbench@live.com. And you know what? Better than that, if you're doing training, I'll give you a little easier one to remember because it kind of goes along with the company name. Just go to training@southwestshootingauthority.com. It's a little longer, but might be able to remember it a little easier. Either one doesn't really matter. So, and I expect to have a lot of fun. I am bringing another very competent instructor with me. It looks like we're getting enough response on these classes that I'm going to need a little help. So I'm bringing some bringing the hired gun here, so to speak. So, no, he's my son. He is extremely competent. He's been helping me with these classes since he was. Those of you that are regular listeners know that he got his New Mexico Junior Hunter Safety Instructor certification when he was 11. When they're supposed to wait until they're 12, but he went into the class. They said, yeah, we'll let him take the class. And then, you know, when he turns 12, if he passes all this, and when he turns 12, we'll give him his certification. Well, he walked out with it that day because he politely and professionally corrected some adults in some of the things that they were talking about. And the instructor of the class agreed, and he got his first certification there. He has since taken, concealed weapons classes when he was, he took his first concealed weapons class that included shooting when he was 9 years old. He took his first 2-day personal defense handgun class when he was 11. And he's been doing it, pretty consistently ever since then. He's 21 years old now and very, very competent and a good friend. And I'm happy to have him along with me. We're going to have a lot of fun up there, and he's going to get to rub shoulders with some patriots that he has never met before, because it's always happened in such a way that he wasn't around. When the Bosworths were here or I was up there or whatever happened, Charlie Brown, no, this is not live, so just so you'll know. It just happened that he's missed these guys just pretty much every time that we've been together. So anyway, And while I'm in the mood for bragging here, the reason I got back just barely in time is because my daughter had her, my youngest daughter, had her track banquet tonight where they give out awards and stuff. And I got to tell you, this girl has her first, she took track one other year and didn't really put her heart into it. You know, she was kind of really shy and just didn't really want to get into it. And this year, it has been such a godsend for her. It has encouraged her to keep her grades up, which she's done exceedingly well. And she has done so well in track. She just missed by, you know, hundredths of a second of setting state or school records. And her coach just went on and on about her there. She got 23 medals this year altogether in the different things that she did. And so I'm really looking forward to her doing this again next year. I've got high hopes for really setting the world on fire up there. You know, people talk about all the time, you see on Facebook and in emails and stuff, constantly. Since they took God out of schools and we don't say the pledge and we don't, you know, God forbid if you have a prayer and all of that kind of stuff. So, we can't do a live one, Doc. This will be a dead one. So, just so you know. So, here in Arizona and New Mexico also, they have no problem with you saying prayers and saying the pledge. As a matter of fact, when we started this banquet tonight, they had one of the students get up and gave a really inspiring, very inspirational prayer and blessed the food and everything. And it was no sound here. Let me see who all does not have sound. Well, Pumpkin Cat's got sound, so if she's getting sound, all the rest of you ought to have sound. So you guys refresh or whatever. So I think who was it up there? Hopper, I believe, had sound too. So if anybody's getting sound, all of you ought to have sound. So if nobody's getting sound, then I've got a problem here. But I thought I was very careful in making sure everything was working here. So so that's what goes on here in Arizona. Prayers and pledge and stuff is what they don't have. And in New Mexico, it's state law that they have the pledge every day. In Arizona, I don't think it is state law, but it is state law that they have to afford you a certain amount of time in the mornings for whatever you want to do. If you want to say the pledge, say a prayer, smoke a joint, whatever it is that you want to do in the mornings, but they give you some time just for that purpose. So, hang on a minute. I had to get me a drink of water. I've been running just as hard as I could go trying to get here on time. So, and I done it. So, okay, with all that being said, talked about our classes. We got all that stuff taken care of. Tomorrow's the last day of school for, they've got a couple of different schools here. And, two different towns here close together. One of them got out like a week ago. And my youngest school just got out, gets out tomorrow. So we're going to go somewhere after school and go to, I don't know what, not sure what we're going to do. We're going to go somewhere and have a little fun. Go to eat Chinese and go to the movies or something. I don't know. Anyway, Radio Doc seems to be having a little problem getting sound. Everybody else has got it. So, T-Bone, sorry about that, brother. I don't know what to tell you. Like I said, if anybody's got it, you ought to have it too. All right, let's move right along here. Got a mixture of stuff, and we're not going to do them in any particular order. But, you know, I never miss a chance to do a story on gun safety or accidents that could have been avoided by obeying simple safety rules and using a little common sense and pulling your head out of your poop chute and doing things in a normal, logical, smart, safe, common sense manner. And, you know, we've heard all manner of idiotic accidents. And I hate to talk bad about these people because oftentimes it ends up very, very badly. You know, somebody getting seriously injured or killed, and I hate that part. But if you look at just the event itself, then some of them are kind of funny, some of them are really, really dumb. But here, luckily, apparently this woman says she's severely injured, but at least by the time that this story was written, she wasn't dead. But her son, a grown man type son, shot her in the face by accident. His name was Richard Lawrence, told officers he was sitting in his truck, showing his mother his brand new 38 caliber pistol, thinking that was probably a revolver, when the gun mistakenly discharged, shooting the woman in the face. The gun did not mistakenly discharge. This is what the media has always done to try to blame it on the gun. It didn't mistakenly discharge. The idiot pulled the trigger somehow. Especially a revolver, it wasn't just sitting there and went off. Guns don't do that. They require some type of stimulus to make this happen. Whether it's dragging it across a range bag or tree limbs, or more often than not, it's a booger hook on the loud button is what it is. Finger on the trigger more often than anything else. But anyway, the woman, his mother, Dorothy Lawrence, was taken to Southwest Mississippi. This is the second one we've had him out of Mississippi in just a couple of weeks, or being treated for serious injuries. Yeah, I imagine so. I could imagine that 38 in the face, probably some serious injuries. I hear dogs barking. I may have to go out and shoot something here in a minute, man. Anyway, the guy insisted that the shooting was accidental. Yeah, I'm sure it was. I'm willing to bet that he didn't intentionally shoot his mother in the face. You know, here about 3-4 months ago, we were at a meeting here locally. Remember the meetings I told you about that we were doing the emergency response training group meetings, and we were trying to kind of take off from that, trying to revive this, talking about some communications, getting a radio tower up here in our community and putting a repeater on it, and being able to, which I'm not in agreement that we need a repeater, but nevertheless, that's what we talked about. Well, anyway, there was a guy sitting in there in this meeting, good friend of mine. Everybody in the meeting was a good friend of mine, as a matter of fact. Next thing I know, I look over at the guy sitting beside me, who is also a good friend of mine. He's holding a handgun with the muzzle pointed right at me. Paul, he's holding it like he's admiring a little statuette or a carved piece of art or something, and holding it pointed right at me. And I said, I know you're not pointing that thing at me right now. And the guy sitting straight across from me said, asked the guy that owned it if it was loaded. And he said, well, yeah. And by that time, I'd already pushed away. I'd taken control of the handgun after that. And right then, we kind of abruptly brought the meeting to a halt and had a little safety class. I unloaded the gun and gave it back to the guy. I was not in a good mood. And I know he didn't do it on purpose. I know neither one of them did it on purpose. But this is the attitude that we get, especially in rural areas where you have people that have been shooting their entire life and still don't know anything about guns. They can hit a deer. They can shoot a prairie dog. They can keep them clean. But there's still things that they just don't know. And I was furious about that. And they don't want to put any money or time into training because they already think they know everything or enough. And then they turn around and do something like that. So, you know, and this, I suppose it will be a plague on the shooting community till hell freezes over. I just don't suppose that we'll ever completely eliminate this because, you know, we can't legislate, we can't mandate everybody in the world take handgun or firearm safety training. Just can't do it. Sometimes I wish we could. But anyway. All right. Let's move on here to a... let me put that one on the shelf. And let's look... Oh, man, I hate this one. Everybody should be familiar with the name Daniel Love. If you're not, you didn't pay a damn bit of attention while Bundy Ranch was going on. Daniel Love was the, I don't know if you call him special agent in charge, that's what they call him in the FBI, but anyway, he was the top dog on the totem pole around there when they got their ass handed to him and had to back off and leave. he is evil. He has no concept of what the Constitution means or stands for. He took an oath that he has absolutely no clue what it's about and has no intention of abiding by his oath. Daniel Love was also the one that, if any of you kept track of things back in the 90s, I don't remember exactly what it was, I apologize for that, but there was a guy named Dr., I think his name was James Redd, R-E-D-D, and he got, unknowingly, to the best of my knowledge, I'm not sure, it was a long story, in the beginning it was, he didn't know anything about it, and then later I think well, I'm not going to say because I don't remember all the details. But anyway, it had to do with Indian artifacts that this guy had and was selling and trading and all that. When I was a kid, everybody did that. These deserts and mountains around here are littered with pottery and arrowheads and stuff like that. You don't just walk out there every day and just arbitrarily bend down and pick up an arrowhead all the time, but they're not terribly hard to find. But busted pottery is everywhere. I could take you a couple of places over in Luna. You can't take a step without walking on Anasazi pottery out there. So, you know, in my day, before all these stupid laws came along and everything, it was commonplace for people to sell and trade pottery, not because it was particularly worth anything, but because it was kind of just a barter deal. It was, hey, you know, I've got this nice pot that I found out here in the rocks, and, you know, I know you've got a collection of them, and this is a real nice one. It hasn't got a chip on it. And you've got a, you know, I'd really like to have that horse or that calf or that generator or tractor or whatever the case was. It wasn't like it was a clandestine type thing where we were, taking this stuff and trying to make a fortune off of it, because nobody really cared. It was just something that was just out there all the time. And Charlie Brown, you're probably exactly right. He probably is a psychopath. He is the epitome of a jackbooted thug. If you want to know what a jackbooted thug is, read up a little bit on Daniel Love. He's just got him a new position with the BLM. They call him a special agent in charge, just like the FBI. He requested this assignment. He's going to remain in Salt Lake City, but he's going to be working with their National Law Enforcement Office, the headquartered in Washington, D.C. In this position, Dan will be responsible for a range of national-level program components, including facility, security oversight, and coordination efforts, as well as the Bureau's Law Enforcement Intelligence Program. This is what his boss said here, or somebody wrote in an internal email there. Same guy says, while I know Dan's leadership in Region 3 will be missed, I'm confident his skills and talents will serve us well in establishing and develop these critical national office programs. So, anyway, I think you'll be hearing more from him. Says this new position was created months after Ammon Bundy led dozens of armed anti-federal lands activists in seizing the unoccupied. This just pisses me off till I can't stand it. He didn't lead armed anti-federal lands activists doing anything. They just didn't take over nothing. There was no stand at. Well, you know the story. The January incident forced the Fish and Wildlife Service to move more than a dozen refuge staff outside of Harney County to ensure their safety. BLM and Forest Service closed their offices in Harney because they're sissies. Because they're little boobs. I'm not even going to read the rest. I'm getting mad. I'm going to mess up my whole evening here. Besides that, it's just about break time. So be assured that we'll hear more about Daniel Love. I will say this. Threats to the federal land management facilities intensified in Nevada in the 1990s during a resurgence of the Sagebrush Rebellion, a movement by rural counties to assert local control over federal lands, as it should be. On Halloween in 1993, a bomb was hurled onto the roof of BLM state headquarters in Reno, which was unoccupied at the time. The blast severely damaged the building's roof. In March 1995, a suspected pipe bomb was placed on the office windowsill of Forest Service District Ranger Guy Pence. The window was blasted out, but no one was injured. Neither crime was ever solved. In Nevada and Utah, Daniel Love led some of the BLM's most complicated law enforcement operations. So that is BLM's jackbooted thug of the day right there. Just so you know.
The door and Freedoms are waning and we'll lose our liberty, slipping one by one until there's nothing left to see. Are you willing to stand with me? Are you just going to let it be? The ranchers are first, but brother, next it may be me. We all stand together or we'll hang separately. Are you going to the tree? Are you willing to be free? It won't get any easier to regain lost liberty. Strange things are happening in this land that once was free. So, brother, I ask you, are you going to stand by me?
Welcome back to another segment of The Shooting Bench, right here on the Survival Circle Radio Network. You know, while we're on the subject of jackbooted thugs here, accidents, accidental shootings, negligent discharges, this story comes out of Portland, Oregon, and believe it or not, it involves some of the people that some of our friends up there, Sheriff Ward. You know, I'm being facetious. He is definitely not our friend. But Portland Police Chief Larry O'Day never told a deputy that his .22 caliber rifle went off during a hunting trip and struck his friend in the back, instead suggesting that the wounded man accidentally shot himself. Now, I've been around guns quite a bit in my life. There are those that might consider me an expert, as a matter of fact. But I tell you, this is a new one on me. I'm not sure how a feller would go about shooting himself in the back, especially with a rifle. Not sure how that happened exactly. Anyway, he didn't identify himself as Portland's police chief or even as a law enforcement officer, period, when he was questioned by the deputy who responded to the shooting on April 21st to a 911 call outside of Fields, Oregon. Sheriff Dave Ward, who is our Burns County sheriff, who we've heard a lot about and from while all this stuff was going on with the refuge and everything, Anyway, O'Day and some of the companions at the scene all tried to steer the deputy into believing that the shooting was self-inflicted. This is what Sheriff Ward said. He said, I do know it didn't happen the way it was originally portrayed. The deputy didn't learn that O'Day was involved until he was able to interview the wounded man last night. So it didn't kill the guy. So how would you expect that somebody, okay, I'm really your friend. I mean, really. I'm not going to tell anybody that you shot me in the back. I mean, you can tell everybody that it just went off. Or just tell them I shot myself in the back. Yeah, that way you won't get in any trouble or nothing. So, yeah, because I'm such a good friend. The 54-year-old man, however, set the record straight. Victim made it clear that he didn't shoot himself. The victim knew who shot him. That's when the sheriff's office called state police to step in. Now, I'm not exactly sure why the state police needed to step in on this, but nevertheless, that's what they said. As soon as we found out who was involved and the victim's statements was different than the statements that had been made at the scene, I contacted Oregon State Police to help in investigating it. Oh, I know why, because OSP, Oregon State Police, these are the ones that will kill those men if they give them any back talk. Those are the ones that shot Lavoie Finicum. So, yeah, and Sheriff Ward was in on that, too. So, yeah, so Sheriff Ward says, hey, you guys, we've been here before. You know what to do. So if this guy gives you any lip, I just want you to shoot him and get it over with. Make it look like an accident if you want. Sheriff said he learned only through recent news reports that O'Day told his boss, the Portland mayor, Charles Hales, 4 days after the shooting that he was responsible for wounding his friend. If he called the mayor and said he had shot his friend, he should have called me as well. I was irritated about that, Sheriff Ward said. He should have picked up the phone and called our office and said, this is what happens. If an accident happens, you raise your hand and say, here's what happened. Just like they did when they shot Lavoie. Huh? Well, that went in action. I forgot that was cold-blooded murder. Whole different thing there. Sheriff's office hasn't heard from O'Day since the day of the shooting. State police and Oregon Department of Justice have taken over the criminal investigation. And it goes on and on. It's pretty long. It talks about the wounded man is described as alert and breathing. That's a very good thing. He was driven to the Fields Station restaurant in Fields, Oregon, where he was airlifted by Life Flight helicopter to the closest trauma hospital. He didn't require surgery for the wound to the lower side of his back. So I'm guessing either the bullet's still wandering around in there somewhere, or it was a clean through and through. And here's the good part right here. The deputy talked to those who were at the scene, capturing the interviews on his body camera. Where were all these body cameras when Lavoie was shot? Those videos have been turned over to state police. That was probably a mistake. They'll lose them or hide them or something. Some members of the group told the deputy they didn't see what happened, but O'Day and others gave the misleading self-inflicted account. Anyway, that's probably enough about that one. I thought that was kind of amusing, though, considering who it involved. I just want to just mention this. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on it because there's always people that on both sides of the deal here and of the topic. But I was prompted to do some research on this from a Facebook post from a friend of mine. And we have members out there of the microwave militia. These are the people that try to convince you that everything about a microwave is evil and dangerous. And while there may be some things that's not advisable with the microwave, they are not that dangerous. There's I did quite a bit of research and study on this over the last 2 days, and you know I've heard a lot about it. But one of the things that I will say right now that I will get into is that a lot of these anti-microwave folks will, and there's lots of stories out there that will back up their claim. Well, I say that because almost every story that I saw was a word-for-word copy of the original that says that Russia banned microwaves in 1976, and they did not. That is a hoax. It is not true. I found a story from the... let's see if I found it here. I know I saved it, at least for the time being. He was the... for lack of a better term, until I can find it here, he was the president of the International Microwave something another that did a lot of research and everything else. And he was in Russia for years, and he said there was never, ever, ever, ever any such ban in Russia on microwaves. So you can do a little bit of research on your own and learn about that, but it is absolutely not true. Now, I can understand, I can see that microwaving something in a styrofoam cup or a styrofoam container, I can understand how that might not be a good thing, particularly if you let it get way too hot. If you're just going to warm something up real quick, it's probably okay. But if you're going to warm something up to the boiling point in there, then I would have to say that that's probably not the smartest thing to do. But I'm not convinced that these things are as evil and dangerous. I mean, they've been around since they've been available commercially in stores and stuff. The first one I ever saw was in a little place called Hubbard's in Farmington, New Mexico. Tebow will remember the Hubbards, I bet you. Well, maybe not. He may not have been in Farmington then. But and that was back when I was going to school in, I was probably 12, maybe. And they'd been out for a while since then. Microwaves actually came out in the late 40s. And by the 50s, early 50s, mid-50s, they were starting to make their appearance in stores and stuff, still not real affordable for the average family and stuff out there. But by the 60s, you know, they started being a little more common. We never had one in my house until I was, it was probably 68, 70, something like that, before we ever had one in the house. And I'll tell you another thing about microwaves that I've learned is, remember, for you folks that remember when the microwaves first came out, every place you went had a sign that said if you wear a pacemaker that, you know, there's microwave in this store and that it's probably going to blow your heart up and everything. Well, that's not true either. There were microwaves, I mean, pacemakers at that time in the beginning were not properly shielded, and there were everything from elevator motors to speakers to any number of things that caused pacemakers to fail. There is not a single documented instance of microwave causing a pacemaker to fail that I could find. I'm sure there may be one out there somewhere, but there's no rash of them that people have reported out there. So we could probably do a whole show on that. That'd be more suitable for Amy's show, probably. But there's just some things that I thought were interesting and interesting to me anyway. I don't know about anybody else. But... All right, let's see here. Those aluminum cookie sheets are good eating, Doc. You betcha. I agree with you on that. Okay, Radio Doc remembers, thinks he remembers Hubbard's. It used to be right down there. You know what? As a matter of fact, I was going to talk about this. I'm really getting off of my normal stuff here tonight. But I, what made me think of Hubbard's, let me get to that in a minute. There was Hubbard's, and right next door was a shop called Spudnut, the Spudnut shop. It was actually a donut shop. And everybody, and then across the street and down the road about 200 yards was Tibbetts Junior High, and that's where, you know, all the kids at lunch would go down to Hubbard's and get something, or go get donuts and stuff from the Spudnut shop. Well, I went through some of my my grandparents' old stuff when my mom moved, and I found Tebow, you'll get a kick out of this. I found a Farmington phone book, Farmington telephone directory, dated April of 1951, 5 years before I was born. And if you, I looked through this thing quite a bit last night. I glanced at it before, but I run across it again. I went through every page and looked at virtually every name in the phone book. Does that sound impossible? Well, no, not really. In 1951, the total entries, I may have missed one or two in counting, but the total entries in this phone book was 1,344. That includes businesses, doctors, and residences. There was 869 residences, which leaves the remainder to be businesses and doctors and stuff, 475 of them. So there's, in the surrounding area right now of Farmington, there's about 100,000 people. I think there's 80,000 right in the immediate area there. But anyway, on the back, this was back when phone numbers, the phone number here for Valley Motor Company was 130. That was the extent of the phone number. There were no zip codes. The addresses were 225 West Main, and that was it. Mountain States Telephone Telegraph Company. Farmington Motor Company, the phone number was 9. Hubbard's Grocery and Meats, phone number was 6. So that's, and I could go on and on about this, but I looked in the ads and stuff, and I looked at some of the businesses that were there in 1951 that I still remember were going strong, you know, in the mid-70s. Sheriff's Department, now, Tebow, you may not know this, but the Sheriff's Department in 1951, you had to call Aztec. You called Aztec 33. And it was long distance. It was long distance from Farmington to Aztec. It was 15 miles. The only sporting goods store there was Garden Swartz Sporting Goods. Now, people that, if you go to Durango right now, there's still a Garden Swartz Sporting Goods. Big, nice store. Really, I mean, really big, really nice. When it was in Farmington, it was a very small store, phone number 109R. But the guy bought that out, took it over here, and I'm not sure what the turn of events was because he didn't take the Garden Swartz name. But anyway, eventually, it became Ross Sporting Goods. Oh, I know what it was. Phil Ross used to work for this guy, I think, at Garden Swartz. And he branched out on his own and became Ross Sporting Goods, which after I came along back in 2004, it became Southwest Shooting Authority in 2006, I believe it was. So, interesting to me, probably interesting to Tebow. It may not be interesting, worth a damn for the rest of you, but I thought it was kind of neat. Now, go and look at these. The Laundriette, self-service laundry. Farmington Lumber, phone number 55. So, anyway, I thought this was kind of neat. I went through every single page last night and looked at all this stuff. Odorless Cleaners, phone 85. Anyway, I'll get off that. I know I'm killing you guys with this, but it was quite a deal. Let me go down. Let me check the chat room, see what's going on here. I've ignored you guys for a few minutes, so. Yeah, Anonymous 2561, I don't know who you are, but welcome to the show, and you're right about primers. You better get them now, folks. I'll tell you what, I don't care too much who wins the election. If Hillary or Sanders happens to win, which is still possible, you're going to see assault rifles, semi-automatic handguns, primers, gunpowder, popular ammunition, 223, 308, 9mm, 45, 40 Smith & Wesson. You're going to see all that stuff evaporate virtually overnight. It's going to go fast. I'll say that you'll have the election results won't be in until late that night, early the next morning, especially if it's kind of close. You'll have until midday that day to get what you need if you haven't got it already. So Anonymous is right on the money there when he says you better get them now. If you need primers or whatever, you better think about tucking some away if you haven't already done it. Most of us, through all the roller coaster of stuff we've been through in the last 8 years, that was C7. I wondered if it wasn't you. I'm glad you made it there, buddy. In the last 8 years, we've been through enough of this up and down here that a lot of us are pretty well stocked up on the things that we need. But, you know, it's money in the bank. It's you cannot ever go wrong with buying ammunition. It was selling for so high in 2009, folks. I drove all over the state. Well, all over half the state. I drove from Farmington. I drove to Albuquerque. I drove to where was that other place? It was over. Shoot, I can't remember where it was. It was way, way north of, it's over by Santa Fe somewhere. I can't remember where it was. Anyway, I drove all over these different places, and I went in and looking for 380 ammo. I bought 380 ammo at whatever retail price was and came back to Farmington and sold it at a good profit because there just was none. I could have just as easily sat on my hands and say, well, you know, I don't care. You know, it's up to you. You guys go to Albuquerque and get it if you want. It was a whole lot cheaper for them. Naturally, the prices that I charge, I'd go and pay, you know, $15, $18 for a box of 380s and then sell it for $25, $28, something like that. Way too much. But it was a whole lot cheaper to do that for people than to drive to Albuquerque looking for a box of 380s. And I did the same thing with primers and stuff like that. Now, I didn't do what one of my competitors did and bought all the, every time the Walmart across the street would get 9mm ammo in, they'd send somebody over there and buy everything that they'd let them have and then take it back across the street and sell it. I didn't do that. But I did make sure that if it was possible, if there was anything in the state for me to keep my customers what they wanted, then I would find it, I would bring it, and they would buy it. Simple as that. It's going to be that way again, ladles and jelly spoons. And I'm telling you that. The Russian primers are very good, Mountain Shooter. They're very good. If you're talking about Wolf, we had people that come in. When we had primers available, CCI, after the crunch, when we had CCIs and Federals and Remingtons on the shelf, we had people come in and specifically ask for Wolf primers because they are good, good primers. For the match shooters that measure their groups in 10,000ths of an inch, I don't know. I don't know if they're that close or not. But they are very consistent, and people would come in and ask for them by name, even when we had all the name brands on the shelf. You know? So don't shy away from Wolf primers or any of those Russian primers. If you come across them, don't be scared of them. Get them. They're usually pretty reasonably priced, too. So it's coming, I'm telling you. There's things that you need to do. There's things that you need to concentrate on here. Primers, if you're you need reloading stuff, primers, powder, any other components that you may need, and ammo. Get whatever you can find. It will sell. RAT right now. That's right. C7. Okay, well, I think, let me see if there's anything else. We're right up against the whistle here, so let me see if there's anything else that I needed to share with you here. Yeah, there is a couple more here, but now actually there's about four more. So I'll save those for either tomorrow. Well, tomorrow's Thursday. Yeah, we can do them tomorrow. Okay, well, with all that being muddled through here and said, well, I think I'm going to ease on towards the door and get out of here. And Amy will still not be back by tomorrow. She may possibly be back Monday, but we're taking Monday off. It's Memorial Day. We're going to take a break. I may actually even do a current pre-record for Monday, even though it's a holiday. I might do that over the weekend sometime. So Amy probably won't. Amy will hopefully be back live with us on Tuesday, with any luck at all. I'll keep you informed, and we'll just play that by ear and do the best we can. All right. Y'all have a good night, and we'll see you tomorrow for more of The Shooting Bench. Good night.
Was born to race. He had a mean streak 2 feet wide. A son of a gun with a taste for fun and more than his share of pride. Take a dirt road curve with a devil's nerve, make a car dance across the mud, and haul and shine with his regular line till the track got in his blood. Was a real hot shot and he bragged a lot, but man, that fool could drive. Cause he loved
to be. You've been listening to The Shooting Bench. Tune in Monday through Thursday from 8 to 9 p.m. Pacific, 11 p.m. to midnight Eastern, for the most politically incorrect show on talk radio.
Mama, like your daughter's up that foul bunch back in town. And them little girls get frisky when they hear that race car sound. They're bringing out the yellow flag, somebody's brakes have failed. There's a horse slick on the inside and a wreck along the rail. You better stand on the stroker, cause a bandit's on your tail.
Tune in again on Fridays at the same time for 2 hours of classic country music on Liberty Lounge.
It's a downright joy for a country boy when he hears them engines moan. But you gotta hang tough, and it gets real rough when you're out there on your own. Cause they'll push you around, they'll knock you down.
And catch Living Away Out Here with me, Amy Reynolds, Monday, Tuesday, and Thursday at 7 p.m. Pacific, 10 p.m. Eastern, for the only good news out there. Trivia, stories, tips, hints, and fun on Living Way Out Here, right here on the Survival Circle Network.
Stroker, get your dander up, this ain't no time to lag. You got to make a lap up if you're gonna take that checkered flag. Number 10 is closing in to even up the score. It's time to wave bye-bye and put the pedal on the floor. You better stand on the stroker, cause you're blowing off their door. Blow the door off, stroker.